ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts. Myra Metcalf, if there was a day in college basketball that you'd say epitomized this whole season so far, what day would that be?
Well, it's a few Saturdays ago.
Myron Metcalf is about to cover his 12th straight NCAA tournament for ESPN.
For the first time in college basketball history, seven top 10 teams all lost on the same day. The previous record had been six teams. Number one, Gonzaga.
What a win for the Gales. They take down number one on an historic night in college basketball.
Number two, Arizona.
And here comes the court storm in Boulder.
Number three, Auburn. Number four, Purdue.
Michigan State takes down Purdue in a wild Big Ten.
Number five, Kansas. Number six, Kentucky. And number nine, Texas Tech. All lost.
Holy smokes.
Our broadcast table is out on the court right now.
I mean, that's crazy, Myron.
It's wild. And I mean, honestly, if you were just kind of tuning in, kind of post-Super Bowl to college basketball, trying to figure out what was going on, I'm sure you were pretty confused.
Yes, exactly.
I think we have some really good teams in college basketball. I don't know if we have a great team. Any team can lose against anyone. That's what you hope to see going into a tournament, but to watch the best of the best fall, I think that's what's going to make the NCAA tournament so interesting.
If you find yourself suddenly trying to figure out what is going on in men's college basketball, you are absolutely not alone. The entire thing is super confusing right now. Even if you did not spend, let's be honest, months away from the game. So today, with conference tournaments tipping off, Myron Metcalf catches us up on why he's ordering so many grande caramel macchiatos with soy milk and sugar-free vanilla. That's not a joke. And, you know, everything else we need to know about college hoops. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, March 8th. This is ESPN Daily.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So Myra Metcalf, it's March. We're starting championship week now. This is the official beginning of March Madness. So how you doing? How do you get ready for the fire hose that you're about to drink from?
Well, I get ready usually by preparing this 12,000-word file. I do a write-up on every single team in the NCAA tournament.
12,000 words, man.
Yeah, when you go to ESPN.com on Selection Sunday, they will announce the bracket, and then ESPN will hit a button, and then my file will be on page one, and it'll show you something about every single team in the field, all 68 teams. It is one of those where, like, you know, my coffee order is ready a couple times a day. You know, I'm going and making a run, making sure I'm good to go, because you got to stay energized for the chaos that's ahead.
So the chaos that I want to start with was Coach K's last home game this past weekend, of course. And this was supposed to be a highly caffeinated celebration of just the GOAT, right? That was what it was billed as. It was a send-off for all time. And instead, what we got amid those maniacs at Cameron Indoor, we got a sad meme factory.
Not the way the crazies thought this one would go, that's for sure. The celebration is on in the visiting locker room now for the guys from Chapel Hill.
Carolina pulls off the upset, 94-81. How would you describe the scene in Durham on Saturday for people who didn't get to live that live?
It was like a very weird frat party, right? Like you had over 90 former Duke players. So it's like Grant Hill and Christian Laettner and Jay Williams and JJ Redick. And then Jerry Seinfeld is sitting next to Adam Silver for some reason. The cost of those tickets were astronomical. Everybody wanted to be in the building to see this grand send-off against a North Carolina team that Duke had defeated by 20 points in the first meeting.
And so to channel one of the spectators you just mentioned here, Myron, what's the deal with Duke getting blown out by Carolina? That's so bad. I'm sorry.
Well, you know what? I mean, the first game, if you watch, Hubert Davis at home, his first time as a head coach in the North Carolina Duke series, he loses at home by 20 points.
87-67 in a game that was completely dominated from start to finish by the Blue Devils.
Tapped a buzzer. Duke was a stronger team.
He was embarrassed. I mean, if you watch that game, there were multiple moments where, like, the camera just goes to Hubert Davis and he's just sitting there on the sideline, not sure what to do. So I think he comes back wanting revenge, but not even just revenge. This is a guy who wants to say, I'm here to stay. And he wants to kind of put his stamp on this first year as head coach of North Carolina. So, you know what? All the pomp and circumstance and the pregame stuff and the crowd. Yes, 99% of Americans cared about that. North Carolina fans did not. And Hubert Davis certainly didn't care about any of that. And that's how they came out to play.
Well, so the pregame was the thing everybody in the country was sort of curious about, but the postgame ended up being, that was the real story. Had you ever seen anything like what Coach K did after the buzzer sounded on this?
I just think certainly no one in the crowd expected what happened, right? But I also think he didn't expect that either. I mean, you just beat North Carolina by 20 points. This wasn't some great North Carolina team. So I think he probably expected this to be this incredible send-off, and he starts off with an apology.
This isn't part of the program. This is impromptu by me. I'm sorry about this afternoon.
Mind you, he says, I'm sorry, you know, after, like, there's been this great presentation. Like, at one point, some guy at Duke was like, we named a bench after you or something like that. It was very odd. I didn't really know what was going on. But, you know, Coach K tells the crowd to be quiet. Today was unacceptable.
No, please. No. Please, everyone be quiet. Let me just say, it's unacceptable. Today was unacceptable.
And then he kind of does something that made me feel like maybe he was trying to make this particular scene like the turning point in a hype video, where he says, but the season isn't over.
And I'll tell you, the season isn't over, all right?
And then he walks off. And I'm curious if you took that as persuasive motivation or as something else.
I'll tell you what that scene is. If Duke wins the national championship, that's the first scene in the Coach K 30 for 30.
Yes.
Right? That is scene number one of the Coach K 30 for 30. If they don't win the national championship, you'll never see that again. but I do think he was, you're sort of there. And everyone's there to see you win and you don't. I think he was trying to give the crowd a pep talk, these Duke fans. It just was so unexpected, all of it. And to sort of go on with the program as scheduled, even after you lose by double digits, it was just an odd sight.
And so now the rest of the montage has a chance of being stitched together, Myron, because the ACC tournament is beginning today, and Duke is still the number one seed in that tournament, right? They get the double bye, they go straight to the quarterfinals, they still have a shot. But the ACC in general, their year right now that they've been having, how would you describe that at this point?
I think it's been kind of a mess. Even though Duke wins the regular season title, they didn't have a ton of competition. North Carolina going into Saturday's game was kind of a bubble team. Notre Dame probably gets in. But there aren't a bunch of ACC teams that you can point to that are certainly NCAA tournament teams. And I think that, to me, is probably the biggest surprise. Virginia Tech trying to get into the field. Virginia probably not going to make it. So it's kind of hard to know what to expect other than Duke being in the title game. And then the question will be, does North Carolina take momentum from that game Saturday and make it there? Does a team like Notre Dame, do you get a desperate run from a team like Virginia? I don't know. But I'm hoping we see North Carolina and Duke part three, because I think that's what college basketball fans deserve.
Yes, the trilogy. We want a trilogy. Okay, so the conference, by contrast, Myron, that is the strongest in the country by acclamation, seems to be the Big Ten, right? And so the Big Ten tournament tips off tomorrow in Indianapolis. That's Wednesday. And Illinois is the top seed, which is sort of surprising, but a result of Wisconsin getting upset by Nebraska over the weekend. What sticks out to you in the Big Ten?
I think what really sticks out at the top is you got legit pros leading some of these teams. I mean, if you look at what's happened to the Big Ten over the last 20 years, they haven't sent as many NBA guys, you know, to the league as, let's say, the SEC.
Yes.
Especially in the one-and-done era. But I think what's unique is Wisconsin. Johnny Davis is a lottery pick. I mean, that guy's legit. Could win the Wooden Award. Certainly a first-team All-American on a lot of lists. I've had a chance to watch Jaden Ivey up close as a TV reporter with our Big Ten games. So I've watched four or five Purdue games, and he is special. Jaden Ivey's going to be a top-five pick. Kofi Coburn, maybe not an NBA guy, not a first-round pick, but still an elite college player. I think it's going to be fun to watch kind of how this all works out, because the reality is, and Big Ten fans say this all the time, don't judge us according to our national championships. Well, that's what people are going to judge, right?
What a great attempt at an excuse. Don't judge us by the thing that everyone cares about.
Exactly. It's not going to matter to the rest of college basketball if you have this strong league with a bunch of NCAA tournament teams and nobody makes the Final Four. So I think that's going to be the big question. Also, watch out for Iowa.
Yeah, what's happening in Iowa, Myron?
Well, I'll tell you what. Iowa, over the last month, might be the best team in America not named Gonzaga. Mm. And that sounds like an exaggeration because they're Iowa, and they obviously just lost to Illinois on Sunday. But Iowa has been incredible. People haven't seen Keegan Murray. Keegan Murray is going to be a lottery pick. 6'8", could be an All-American, really talented guy. And I think Iowa could be a team that shocks a lot of people. But again, if they don't have any Final Four teams, if they're not competing for the national championship, nobody is going to care.
Speaking of potential championship contenders, right? I'm looking at Joe Lunardi's bracketology at this moment. I'm seeing that out of the current projected top seeds in the NCAA tournament, which can obviously all and will obviously all change as conference tournaments start here this week, but none are from the ACC and none are from the Big Ten. And instead, at the very top in that foursome, we have Gonzaga, Arizona, Kansas, and Baylor. Baylor obviously won the title, defending champs. But what's changed about them compared to last year, Myron, for people who have maybe hibernated through the college season so far?
I think everything's changed for Baylor. I mean, they lost the core of that team from last year. You know, Scott Drew's just a great coach, and he wins Big 12 Coach of the Year, and he proves once again that no matter who you give him, he's going to find a way to help them reach their ceiling. I mean, what Baylor has done after winning the national championship, losing all of the top guys on that team, and then bouncing back and possibly grabbing a one seed again.
Yeah.
It's one of the more remarkable things I think we've seen in college basketball's recent history.
The team that Baylor defeated in the title game, obviously, is Gonzaga. And, you know, Mark Few, man, you mentioned Scott Drew being appreciated in ways now that he had not been prior. Mark Few is still hunting for the thing that everybody cares about. He is still hunting for his national championship, just like the Big Ten seems to be. And I know you were big on Gonzaga last season. You were our guy on this team the entire run. What's your forecast for them this year?
Oh, I think they can win the national championship. But it's always interesting, too, like how we talk about Gonzaga in their hunt for a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have some of these doubters until they pull that off. But they've also been playing like elite basketball for like 20 years. This is like UCLA in 1950 or something, right? Like, I don't think anyone was like, hey, get it together. But that's how people treat Gonzaga. But I tell you what, Chet Holmgren is going to be a top three pick in this NBA draft, 7-footer, who just does it all.
Crazy, man.
Guy can run the floor, he can pass, he can shoot. Drew Timmy is going to be a first-team All-American, Wooden Award contender. When Gonzaga lost to Duke, and I was there in Vegas, Floyd Mayweather had the biggest chain I've ever seen, right? But when they lost to Duke, everyone was like, I told you so. And I actually think that helped Gonzaga kind of quietly work in the shadows a little bit, continue to get better. And I think they're going to go into the NCAA tournament as the best team in America.
But speaking of quietly working in the shadows, Myron, it does feel like another entire conference has now snuck up on us as this powerhouse. And so I want to get to them and what else feels very different about this year after the break.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Myron, I look over now at the SEC, and the SEC is the place where, you know, football is king. It's not the basketball powerhouse as America tends to stereotype the SEC, but they got 6 teams that are going to make the tournament, or they're projected to as of right now. And Auburn is 27-4. And a lot of us, let's just be very honest here, have not seen a second of the Auburn Tigers this season. So what makes them so good?
Well, to me, man, it starts with Jabari Smith, right? Like, you remember those old, like, 90s video games where you could create a player?
Yes.
Right? Like, that is Jabari Smith.
Oh, there's the deadly Jabari Smith.
Jabari Smith, you think you're there, and you're not. I mean, you give him an inch, and he's still going to make it, even if you're right there.
So I think he's such an enigma. That's where you start. Like, how do you handle Jabari Smith? Wendell Green, Katie Johnson, a couple of transfers have also been really good for Bruce Pearl's team. But then Walker Kessler, the big man who came over from North Carolina, the 7-footer, has been really, really good. Both he and Jabari Smith are on the Wooden Awards top 15 list. So it's just been cool to see what they've been able to do. And I think that this is a team, if you look at their schedule, if you look at what they've been able to pull off, they beat a good Loyola Chicago team. They beat a good LSU team. They swept Alabama. And they're top 25 in KenPom in both adjusted offensive and defensive efficiency. Mm. And those are the teams, if you look at history, that end up making it to the NCAA tournament's final stages when they have that kind of balance, and they have it all.
Yeah, and that's Ken Pomeroy, the preeminent college basketball statistician / nerd who dives into all these numbers and creates profiles for teams that are contenders. And yeah, the dude, by the way, who might be, yeah, straining your sliders when it comes to like all of those talents, right? Shooting, size, and all of that, he would seem to be a big part of that statistical projection.
Yeah, I mean, just what they're able to do. And just hard matchup. I would say Auburn's probably the most difficult team to defend, I think, in college basketball. And that's what's going to make them a handful for anybody they end up facing.
So Auburn's story is really rosy right now. The Pac-12, though, brings us a team that should not be feeling great, at least if you judged them by what happened at the beginning of last season. And I'm talking about the Arizona Wildcats, Myron, because we're talking about a self-imposed postseason ban around corruption and recruiting, all of that. And now here they are, just one of the best teams in the country again. What do you make of that specific turnaround from a embarrassment with humiliating, problematic headlines to now back in the middle of everything?
I think Tommy Lloyd is just that good. I mean, like, people in basketball circles knew that Tommy Lloyd, once he got his chance, would be a great coach. Spent years under Mark Few at Gonzaga. Had been ready for a long time, I think, just was waiting for the right job. And I think here's what he did, Pablo, that was really cool. Like, I think most coaches in this situation would come to a new school and they would fire everybody. Like, not because they're...
Well, you got to clean up, right? You don't want any trace of the previous regime.
You get rid of everybody. That's just what happens. That's not mean. That's just business. And he kept two Arizona assistants from last year's team. He just kept Jack Murphy and he kept Jason Terry, you know, who was a great player at the school.
Yeah.
And I think that gave him a lot of street cred with this team and just with the whole community. Because what he was saying was, listen, I could clean house, but I want to have some continuity here when I come aboard. And I think doing that was such a really, really smart move for him. And those guys bought in. And now he just has an incredible team, a team that looks like it can compete for a national championship. And it's been fun to watch how good Tommy Lloyd has been in year one.
I mean, the other aspect too, Myron, is that, like, a lot of coaches, they just want all the credit for themselves, right? The holdovers, they don't want to make it seem like they inherited stuff. They want to make sure that this win that they got is 100% theirs.
Well, yeah, and what if it doesn't work? I mean, what if? How do you trust them? You know, are you sure they're on your side? I mean, all those things, I'm sure, would go through the minds of most coaches. But Tommy Lloyd made a point of saying, I want to keep some of the guys who've been here on this staff because that's going to help this team. I think it was a huge risk, but I think it was a risk that ultimately paid off.
A huge risk like the risk Jason Terry took in the NBA when he got a tattoo of the Larry O'Brien Trophy before he had ever won the Larry O'Brien Trophy. And then he went and won the Larry O'Brien Trophy.
He's used to being in these risky moments, right?
And the Big East, as we know, is, I mean, Jesus, man, this is their 40th consecutive year at Madison Square Garden. Speaking of being very used to things. And Providence won the league in the regular season. Villanova was just behind them. But it also, again, this is the story of our show today. It seems wide open because of UConn and Marquette and Seton Hall all playing pretty well. How much mayhem is going to be at the Garden as a result of what's going to happen in the Big East?
I mean, I think it'll feel like the old Big East, you know? I mean, I think that's what we're headed toward. I mean, you have a team like Xavier that just can't stop losing, but will they find a way? I mean, last year, Georgetown won the whole thing. How, you know?
Right.
So I think this is just going to be a wild event. Shaka Smart and Marquette have surprised a lot of people. Seton Hall's been playing well. You have a Creighton team that has finished strong, but lost Ryan Nembhard, their point guard, so they got to overcome that. UConn, as you mentioned, is legit, I think. Villanova, always tough. And then you have Providence. I mean, Ed Cooley is your favorite coach's favorite coach. Like, everyone gave him respect behind the scenes, but he finally is getting it publicly after winning the Big East and giving that school its first Big East title. As a guy who was born and raised in Providence, Rhode Island. So it's just a really cool story for him. But I think this is going to be like the old Big East tournaments. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, the old Big East tournament without Georgetown, that would be the big caveat. Because you mentioned Georgetown won this thing last year. But Byron, for people who are not familiar with what Patrick Ewing's year has been like coaching Georgetown, how would you say that has gone?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I went out there and wrote a story about Georgetown in the middle of all this, and Patrick Ewing sits down to talk to me, and I believe his words, Pablo, were, "What do you want?" which suggests that you had an individual who maybe was dealing with a stressful situation. And that things just got worse from there. I mean, they have not won a game since December 15th when they beat Howard. 4 days before that, they beat Syracuse. I was at that game. And at the game at Syracuse that they won on December 11th, Alonzo Mourning's there, Dikembe Mutombo. There's this festive atmosphere. They named the court after Big John Thompson. And then they just stopped winning. And they literally have not won a game since December 15th.
20 straight losses for Patrick Ewing.
Yeah, and if you told someone who, you know, maybe they haven't watched college basketball in 30 years, that that's what happened, they'd be shocked. But the AD came out and said, Patrick Ewing, we're going to reevaluate some things, but it looks like maybe he comes back. But this has been one of the most terrible stretches in college basketball history, not just for Georgetown, for any team that I've ever covered in my career.
Right. And that roller coaster that Patrick Ewing is trapped on, Myron, I mean, the trend line that we have established here is that parity in this sport is at an all-time high, it seems like, even compared to last year, which was, you know, a data point in a trend line that suggested that all of this is becoming less predictable. Why is it? What's different about college basketball today in the last several years versus how it used to be?
You know, I think that's a good question. This generation of athletes have learned they can go anywhere and still get to the NBA. That's changed a lot. You know, I always say when Kevin Durant goes to Texas, I think that opens up some eyes for a lot of people that he wasn't at Duke or Kansas or Kentucky. And there's just been a trend of guys who feel like, hey, wherever I go, it's not going to matter. The NBA will find me. You know, Chet Holmgren 20 years ago is playing at Kentucky. Jabari Smith 15 years ago is playing at Duke. And those guys are at schools that haven't been powerhouses necessarily. So I think that to me is the biggest difference. And then the transfer portal. I mean, the transfer portal has made it so every year teams are going to hit the reset button and just try to get as many good players as they can. Kentucky has been a beneficiary of that this year. This Baylor team won a national championship that way. And now they could win another one this year also with some guys who've been other places. But I think that the diversity within the talent pool is what has changed the most. Guys know they can go anywhere and find success. And more importantly to them, they can get to the next level. I also think when you throw in the name, image, and likeness changes, like you're going to see more diversity as well, because it's one thing to win and be a star. It's another thing to do all that and make a ton of money. I mean, Ty Washington has a Porsche deal at Kentucky. So I think that is going to be the kind of thing that appeals to some of these top players who may say, forget Kansas and Kentucky and Duke. I'm going over here to this school that people aren't talking about because it has the best combination of things that I want.
So, Myron, as you take the wheel of your car now and you're driving to these games and college basketball, in one sense, is fully back, court storming's happening. It's just, it feels like the sport that it used to be, while also, for the reasons you just said, very much not being the sport that you grew up with. How are you feeling about your game, man? How are you feeling about the sport that you love?
Oh, I feel like it's changing, but it's changing for the better. I mean, the fact that a Chet Holmgren is not at a Kansas, Kentucky, or Duke, to me, is a bright spot. Like, it opens up the level of competition. That Baylor can win a national championship with a bunch of transfers. That Auburn can come out of nowhere, and maybe they're a Final Four team. So I think that, to me, is a good thing for the health of the sport and for the sport's future. In terms of the vibe, I think it's going to be cool to see a more normal tournament that fans get to travel to. I mean, I was at Baylor versus Gonzaga national championship game, and there were Baylor players who were FaceTiming their parents in the crowd because they couldn't touch them, right? Like, security wouldn't allow them to go up the aisle and talk to their parents. Like, that's the world we were living in last year. So I think this will feel more like the one shining moment kind of NCAA tournament, and we'll get more of those big memories, and I'm excited for that.
Yeah. Myron Metcalf, thank you for giving us a little FaceTime, as always, on ESPN Daily.
Thanks for having me, man.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.